Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Campionato di calcio italiano. Good afternoon, good evening, everybody, wherever you may be. I am not Connor Clancy, it's me, Dov, because Connor is on a train somewhere in central Italy. We don't know where exactly, but it might come back. We'll see later in the show. However, I have two recognisable faces, or voices even, on the podcast with me. It's Vito Doria and Nicholas Caro. Vito, how are you doing?
Look, I'm feeling reasonably good. Been a bit ill in the last couple of days, but this morning's results have been a rather ideal tonic, so hopefully it's up and above from here.
So you're not going to shout at me this week, no?
Probably not.
Right, okay. Well, everybody, you're in for a treat then. I'm not getting shouted at. Nicholas, you're not going to shout at me, are you?
No, I'm in a very happy mood, and I'm very glad to see that Vito has got some positive results overnight. So I think we'll have a nice friendly pod today, which is going to be great.
Brilliant. That's what we like to hear. We're always about friendliness. Although, Vito, your rant last week inspired Vieri Capretta to write an article about Catenaccio. So there you go. That is to come, people. So you can look out for that. And Vito, you can shout at him afterwards. Right. Before we, obviously, the big game of the weekend was Milan-Roma. However, I want to start with the events at the Stadio Luigi Ferraris, because Sampdoria smashed Napoli 3-0. De Frel got two. And then Fabio Quagliarella scored what is a normal goal for him, really. This one's for Vito. I'm going straight to Vito on this one. This was brilliant, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Especially that first half, I thought we played a superb game of football. There was great fluidity and great link-up play. So it was rather incredible to see us destroy Napoli, especially in that first half like we did. And the main difference there was having Ekdal in the regista role, controlling the play, and also having Riccardo Saponara playing in that trequartista role. Until he was injured, I thought he was very decisive. And in particular, he was the one that set up the opening goal with that excellent pass to De Frel.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing, Ken, I noticed as well at the midfield, like being there and seeing what they were doing with Ekdal sitting there. It allowed Linetti and Barreto, both of them were really just, and the strikers and Saponara, when he was just closing everything down and didn't give Napoli a chance to get on the ball at all, which was impressive. You could tell it kind of took everything out because they were knackered by the end of it. So what's happened then, Vito? Is this kind of like something that Giampaolo's instilled? Is it the players have kind of realised actually we're quite good and we can do something?
Well, there are a combination of factors, but I strongly do believe that starting Ekdal and Saponara were the two main reasons. And also having Lorenzo Tonelli in defence was also important. He was very assured at the back and he was comfortable on the ball. And going back to Edgar Barreto, at least he was playing as a box-to-box midfielder, which is his preferred role instead of him being the regista. So even though he wasted the ball a few times, at least he was in a role that probably suited him much more. And with his energy as well as Carol Linetti's, I think they just overran the Napoli midfield.
I'm going to stick with Samp. Nicholas, Fabio Quagliarella scored a goal. It was quite good, wasn't it?
Ridiculous. I mean, you almost have to think as a Napoli supporter, like, can you really be that unhappy when they're scoring goals like that? Like, you can't defend that. That's ridiculous. And at his age, he's got plenty of seasons to go, obviously. I'm sure he'll have like a 5-year stint at Chievo before he retires.
He's not good plenty enough. Come on, let's be serious for a second. Obviously, well, he got that goal. You can't really say much about it other than how great it was. I like De Frel, because obviously he got the first goal, just smashed it from the edge of the box after a great counter-attack, and then was kind of in the right place at the right time for the second goal as well. So I'm going back to Vito Nicholas, and what has he added? Because obviously last year it was Zapata and Quagliarella. This year it's De Frel and Quagliarella, and they're two very different players.
De Frel, in my view, is a lot more mobile than Zapata, so I think that will make a difference. And technically, he doesn't look too bad on the ball. So hopefully he can regain his confidence, and he's already done that in the opening match. So it's a very ideal situation for him, whereas at Roma, he wasn't getting that time or those opportunities due to having a stronger squad around him. But at Samp, it should be ideal. And I reckon that in the Sampdoria's case, just generally, I think the play would be more cohesive and more fluid as well. So when you've got mobile forwards, it's easier to keep possession, but also helps to create better movement, quicker movements, and make things more unpredictable for the opposition defence.
And that's exactly what Sampdoria did. Now, let's get on to Napoli then, because they were rubbish, Nicholas. What on earth has happened? They were all at sea in defence, overran in midfield, created next to nothing in attack. I thought this is the great Carlo Ancelotti. What's gone on?
Well, if you ask Carlo Ancelotti himself, it's all about their attitude, apparently. He seems to think, and, you know, fair play, you can see a lot of similarities. They started the match in very similar circumstances to the past two matches, where they didn't look that great and they went down early. I think Ancelotti actually said the only difference was there was no comeback in this match. And true, because Samp continually just went on with it and dominated for the most of the match. I don't think there's anything too concerning at this point.
Nicholas, your microphone has went off fuzzy.
Great.
Revito, come to you. While Nicholas sorts his microphone out. Napoli have conceded 6 goals this season off their first 6 shots on target that they've faced. That's pretty rubbish. Like, what do you think has gone wrong there?
I think that without Maurizio Sarri, that the structure of that defence has surprisingly gone out of that window, which is rather bizarre because it's the same back four that they had last season. So there was Hussai, Abiol, Koulibaly and Mario Rui. But it seems that, I don't know, from the outside looking in, Ancelotti has either taken that structure out or he's tried to simplify it too much, and they're not making the same movements. They're not reading the play like they used to. So I just find it extremely bizarre that you can go from one coach to another. And it's fair enough that they both have different styles of play or coaching, but it's just a big change and I'm really surprised by it. There must be something that Ancelotti's doing in training that's probably not being addressed, or there were things that Sarri was doing in training to really improve them, but this time more casual, which is not ideal even at this stage of the campaign.
All right, Nick, go on. Do you think you might be sorted out?
Yeah, apologies. We don't get quality internet down in Australia, so we do the best with what we're given. Yeah, I mean, just going from what I was just saying, you know, it seems to be very much an attitude thing. But what I was getting on to is that, you know, I don't think it's anything too concerning at this point. Ancelotti's clearly still getting things together and still obviously trying different things. Obviously, we saw Marek Hamšík and Jose Callejon on the bench the entire match, which is a huge change for Napoli. So he's clearly still experimenting and seeing what combinations are working. Ancelotti said that wasn't the reason why they lost. You know, that's open to interpretation, but certainly he's still himself, you know, playing with things, tinkering and seeing what's going to work best for this Napoli team moving forward. But after two wins, it was interesting that he did bench them. You know, usually you'd think that you stick with a winning combination, but each to their own.
Indeed. And of the kind of individual performances, Diawara wasn't very good. He was actually hopeless. Zielinski went missing for the entire game. I mean, Nick, you're a fan of these young Napoli kids, and he's gave them a chance. And already, granted, Sampdoria is a difficult place to go, but they've failed that test miserably.
Yes. But look, I mean, look, how many minutes has Diawara played, like, in the top league in the last season? Like, it probably the season before last was when Diawara was looking really well, when he played in that tie against Real Madrid. He looked class, and since then he's barely played any top-grade minutes. So you can kind of expect him coming into this a bit cold, that he's not going to be, you know, up to the standard. So he needs more minutes. You know, whether or not he's going to be a success, maybe that's, you know, maybe he's lost those crucial development years, but he needs a bit more time to be able to adapt and, you know, properly install himself in this team.
Right, we've got a couple of comments in the comments section. Doria Boy has said a few things. He said, why change a working system? Sarri knew his team. He was with them for 3 years and he should have been comfortable resting player for some games. And Ancelotti, on the other hand, is new to the team and he should have set out first before tinkering. But that's something that Allegri did when he took over Juve. He kind of kept with Conte's team and slowly implemented kind of his style and his system into the club, which obviously has worked wonders, right?
Now, I'll just quickly comment on that. Like, I agree with that to an extent. The only difference is that one player, Jorginho, was central to that Sarri style of play. So that, I think, in itself has forced some of these changes and tinkering from Ancelotti. And, you know, when you look at how central and crucial Jorginho was to the way Napoli played in recent seasons, you can understand why he might be going this way.
Right, there we go. Right, let's move on then. Because on Friday, Milan played Roma at the San Siro, and they won in the 95th minute through Patrick Cutrone. Vito, Milan were really good in this game. One of the stats that kind of shocked me a little bit was that Milan had 26 shots on goal to Roma's 6. Has Gattuso changed so much in the summer? I mean, the only kind of difference really was Higuain playing. The rest of the team is pretty much the same. I mean, what's kind of been the change there?
I see a big change in AC Milan's style based on the first two Serie A games that we have seen of them. We've had this either narrative or perception that Gattuso is just going to create a hardworking team similar to his attitude as a player. But this Milan team looks very comfortable on the ball. They play with great confidence and they do link up very well. It's not like they're making casual passes or they're squandering their passes. They're actually creating play and they look confident going on the ball. So it's a big change in style and I'm surprised that Gattuso has made that. But, yeah, definitely with Higuain, he's a class striker and I think with this new philosophy or change in style, I think he might benefit from that. And he is a quality finisher. I just think that at Juventus he didn't really fit in that well or live up to the
hype. Well, brilliant segue, Vito, because Berat says Higuain, incredible. Nicholas, I was there, and Higuain was, for me, probably the best player on the park for Milan. Not obviously, he didn't score, but the way he's working back, he's working for the team, he's creating space, and he played the pass that put Cutrone in. Is he going to be like an even better player at Milan than what he was at Juve?
Yeah, you pretty much took the words right out of my mouth, Dov. You mentioned pretty much the only difference is Higuain's come into this team, is exactly what you said. And that, to me, has made a huge difference to the way this Milan team is playing in that final third, even in the middle third and the forward third. Because if you actually look at the heat maps of the positioning, Higuain is actually, he drops more than the likes of Suso and Çalhanoğlu that actually play further up. The amount of work he's dropping and feeding into that build-up play, that's almost just as important as what he's doing around the penalty box for this Milan team. And it's opening up so much space and opportunities for the likes of the Bonaventuras of the world, who's obviously been quite strong himself. Apologies if you can hear a baby in the background.
Next kids are going crazy, everybody. They're loving it. Let's take Wayne talk.
big Milan fans down here. Love it. I mean, I was actually looking at some of Higuain's stats, and he's passing. You know, obviously we're only a couple games in, but the amount of passing he's completing so far this season, it's far and away more than what he was doing in basically any other season with both Napoli or Juventus. He's involved more in the play, and he's actually does really well in that kind of role. So he's really impressed me. And while obviously Cutrone will get a lot of the headlines for the goal, that was all Higuain. That pass, the composure to, particularly in that kind of time of the game, you know, a striker of his caliber is more than likely going to be like, well, I need to score this, and will go himself. But the composure to actually see that space and play it through perfectly for Cutrone, incredible. Yeah, Higuain looks like he's really going to, I mean, he's aging, but he's you know, looks as good as ever in this AC Milan outfit. And, exciting times for Milan.
Indeed, I think so. I reckon that he could be a real difference maker for them, not in terms of goals, but like you say, how he kind of fits in with the play. Vito, Roma were not very good. I think they had about a 20-minute spell in the second half after Di Francesco changed his formation. And kind of dominated Milan for a little bit, but didn't really create anything. Obviously, Di Francesco, I think, got it wrong with the formation and things like that. But what do you think's happening at Roma? Because they don't look anything like the side that were so good last season and that got to the semi-finals of a Champions League.
It seems that Di Francesco has overhauled the midfield too much based on the choices of personnel, and also choosing the 3-4-3 formation, I thought, was a bit bizarre, especially because I believe that Javier Pastore is best suited to the trequartista role, and he did not play in that role that much, so I don't think it was really convenient, that formation. Even in the second half with the changes, I did not see much urgency in Roma's play or much unpredictability. I thought their play was rather simplistic, and they did not look very inventive and all, and they do have creative players. So it was a rather underwhelming performance against the Rossoneri.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You know, I was indeed. And we've got a comment from Aaron Holland, and he says that accommodating Pastore in the lineup is messing everything up. And then Barrett's just chimed in there and he says, too much tinkering with the midfield, big losses, and Strootman and Nunjangalang. And Nzonzi looks promising, but there is concern. I mean, looking at that, Nick, do you think that the midfield is an issue then? Because obviously, Nainggolan was brilliant last season for them, best player. And they've lost him, and they're hoping what Pastore, Pellegrini, Cristante can step up, and they're not doing it.
Yeah, I mean, midfield is an issue, but at the same time, you know, I kind of feel like I'm becoming a bit of an apologist for teams so early in the season. But, I mean, look, when you look at Roma, last season, I think most people would probably say they overperformed in a lot of ways. No one expected them to do that well under Di Francesco so quickly. So, you know, as you guys have mentioned, that losing Nainggolan and Strootman is huge, huge losses in midfield. So it is going to take a lot of time to try and sort that out. And Nzonzi at times looked all right, but also at times looked rather average, let's say, particularly that last pass to that kind of set up the goal for the winner. So
that's fine. That's fine, Nick. That's all right. We've done and dusted, I think, on that. A couple of comments we've got. And we've got another. We've got one from Alec Villasenor, who says, I blame Monchi. Simple as that. Aaron Holland says, leaving Cliver, Under, El Shaarawy to give Pastore a more attacking role probably isn't the best thing to do. Right, let's move on. Vitor Doria. Parma versus Juventus. This was the game where Parma were back, obviously back in the big team, playing the big guns after 3 years out. They finally played the Serie A champions at the Tardini in Parma. They gave them a good game, to be honest. And if it wasn't for Blaise Matuidi, they would have got a point out of the game. What did you think of Gervinho in particular? Because Conor Clancy, the regular host who was at that game, he was raving about Gervinho.
In particular, in the first half, I thought Gervinho was superb. He scored the goal, but it was his trickery, his speed, and the confidence he had to run at defenders that made the difference for Parma. Parma do rely on the wings a lot to create chances, and you can see that Gervinho, with his quality and his experience, makes a difference to this Parma side. And if they stand the chance of surviving relegation, he will need to keep performing like this and contributing with the goals, because it does give that team that belief that they can challenge a side as talented as Juventus. And I thought they might have even taken the lead before halftime too, because they had some good chances, but Szczęsny had to make a save, and there was also one block on Di Gaudio as well. So I think they can be proud with the performance, especially the first half, but if they can sustain that for longer periods, they can be a rather good team to watch, and they might be able to obtain more results as the season progresses.
Possibly, right. What about Juve then? Because they got another win. Conor Clancy, who was at the game, like I mentioned, he wasn't too impressed. Did you think, Vito, that that's just Juve just starting the season or getting into gear, or do you think there's maybe a few problems that are kind of slotting in like four new players into the team?
Accommodating new players has made a bit of a difference. So obviously they haven't fully gelled yet. But at least with Juventus, I don't think they really slowed down after the 2-1 scoreline. They did attack a bit more, although they didn't create clear chances after that. But it wasn't like they sat back and just defended that lead. They had confidence on the ball. And if we are going to talk about accommodating players and all that, a a lot of people are focusing on Cristiano Ronaldo because he's new to the team, but also Federico Bernardeschi has become a starter in this team. So I think him playing on a more regular basis might be something to get used to, because last season he was more of an impact player off the bench. So you have a different player, different characteristics, and then, you know, it also changes the shape of the team. So it's a work in progress, but the depth is there.
Ray Vito, you mentioned the big man, big Cristiano, not scored again. People are starting to go, oh my God, Cristiano's past it. Cristiano's rubbish. He's not really though, is he? Let's be honest.
No, I would not write off someone like Cristiano Ronaldo so soon, especially after just three rounds. Also keeping in mind that he's just arrived in Serie A, and it's a different style to the Spanish La Liga and, of course, to the Premier League when he was at Manchester United. So getting used to the tight defences and also the tactical systems, it's going to take him some time. And defenders are going to keep an eye on him because of the talent he possesses. So I would not lose too much sleep over it. I would be more concerned if he was not performing in the big Champions League games and things like that. But we'll have to wait until after the international break to see how he impacts on this Bianconeri side.
Cheyenne, Cheyenne, he said, it's frustrating watching Juve go through this system transformation. Can Allegri please stop playing Cuadrado as a left back right back, he means. Nick, do you see anything kind of Juve that maybe would have a, or is having an impact there, given that they've not really performed fantastically well in the three games so far this season, but regardless, they've got the wins?
Yeah, I don't see that much of it. I mean, the last two or three seasons, do we ever really watch Juventus and see them win and be like, wow, they played some great football today? Like, it's just, it's not really how they go about Serie A. They, you know, they do what they do, need to do, and they get the points. So it's, I mean, there is some changes, obviously, but I mean, I don't think anyone in that team is going to be that concerned. They're still obviously growing some combinations, some new combinations there. So that'll be more precise as we get through the season. But they'll be more than happy, I think, to with how they're going, because they're getting the results and that's what counts. And that's what the other teams don't do, whether they're playing well or poorly. So, you know, they'll continually improve throughout the season, and I'm sure they'll be lifting the title.
Yeah, and they'll win it at the end. It's like there are certain things in life, taxes, death, and this one in the Scudetto. That's pretty much how life works. Right, let's move on. Bologna versus Internazionale. This was fun, Nicholas, after the 66th minute, because Inter struggled to break down Bologna before that. But then Raja Nainggolan, the ninja, he had a nice one too. I think it was with Politano, and then put it in. Then Antonio Candreva scored a goal, which is amazing, and Perisic got a third one. So you must have been happy, right? Because it's your first win of the season. Nainggolan scored on his debut. Happy dance. Everybody's good, right?
Yeah, happy. Particularly to do it, score three goals without Mauro Icardi is, even better, I guess. That was the big concern going into the match with Icardi and Lautaro Martinez not, apparently not going to be available. He did sit on the bench, I believe. But Keita Balde was playing in that striker role. So it was a bit unsure how that was going to work. And really in the first half, there wasn't much going on in attack. That had all the possession, Inter, obviously. But
Hold on, right? I'll get you on that. The Inter attack, right? Were you not a bit worried that basically Bologna offered nothing? They were horrid.
Mm.
And Inter really struggled to break them down. Is that not a bit worrying that without Icardi, goals do not come?
Not really, because Nainggolan's just made his debut. And not only he's made his debut with not the normal striker for Inter. So there was a lot of things going into the match that was like, well, how is this going to work exactly? The brand new combinations that aren't even Inter's first team combinations. So it was always going to be a question mark. And you could see that in the first half, like you just mentioned. They really struggled to get any real fluidity in that final third. So, and, you know, look, credit to Bologna's defence, but as you said, they really needed to do a bit better than that. So at halftime, I was very concerned, but they kind of got it together. Politano, off the back of last week's performance, I thought he was arguably the best for Inter, and he continued that. He started to create a lot of opportunities, and then Ivan Perisic keeps on being world class. He's just amazing. Probably my favorite player in the world right now. But with Politano and Perisic on either side of the Inter striker, that's it's so exciting at the moment. Nangalan can continue to build the combination with Icardi up front. That attack is just looking sublime, and it's got the depth now, so lots to be excited about. And, you know, these were the positives that I was speaking about last week when me and Connor got into a bit of a row. Like, while the result wasn't there against Torino, there are so many positives to like about this Inter team. And, yes, it's still coming together. Yes, there's going to be a few more games when it doesn't look great and there's some question marks, but lots to be excited about. And
right, hold on. We've got a comment, Nicholas, right?
All right.
LolXY1 has said Spalletti, but he said a wee expletive, is getting exposed out there with these terrible tactics slash selections. And now I think we've got something going up on foxoftimefootball.com that's kind of noting that in the three games Inter have played, they've started with three different formations. So last season, I remember Spalletti was getting absolutely pilloried for playing with the same formation of more or less the same team every week. Now he's changing it, and people are still moaning about it. What's going on?
It seems like every week on the pod too, there's a lot of people don't seem to take a liking to Spalletti's tactics. And I mean, I agree to an extent. I mean, I wouldn't say he's the most tactically, good coach there is, but I think he does the job with what he's got. And to be honest, I think in Inter's situation, given the last few seasons, I wouldn't necessarily say that the most strategically aware manager is what that team needs. It needs someone that can actually take control of that team and get them working, create a new culture. That's been Inter's main problem for me. So I'm not really someone that's going to go out there and say, well, you know, we need someone with better strategy, with better tactics. We don't need him. Inter don't need him, Maurizio Sarri. They need someone that's going to fuse all this talent together at the moment, because the culture, the attitude, the mindset, that's been the main problem. As we kind of spoke about last week, it hasn't been necessarily the way they're playing. So, I mean, tactically, that is. So I don't get this, the Spalletti hate, to be honest. I think he's doing a good job. He did a great job last season, and long may it continue.
Okay. Wanted to continue, but we don't. Vito, Bologna. I was at this game, and the thing I took away from Bologna was that Bologna are crap. It's literally as simple as that. They've not scored in Serie A yet. Let's see, this season, for the first time ever in their history, not scoring in the first three games. They didn't ever look like scoring. Pippo Inzaghi's taken them back, has he?
It seems that way. And also, he's relying a lot on the 3-5-2 formation, which he was using at Venezia. Based on what we saw against Inter, though, it looks more like an 8-0-2, because that midfield has workhorses and there isn't enough creativity there. The two forwards, Santander and Falcinelli, they did not do much offensively, and it seemed that Bologna only got out of the defensive shell once Inter took the lead. So at the moment, I don't have much belief in Bologna turning things around soon, unless Pippo either changes his formation, or even if he does keep the 3-5-2, he tries to accommodate someone that's going to help them break from defense to attack much quicker, because they might have defended in numbers, but they offered nothing on the counter-attack. They just...
Vito, they offered nothing in any attack. Yeah. It was ridiculous. Santander and Falcinelli were... exactly. That was in the first 5 minutes. Yeah, in the first 5 minutes or something. to Santander, I was looking at him like, this boy, he's not going to do anything. And every single time he did absolutely nothing. And even when they brought Destro on, they kept Santander on, and Destro was as well not being there. Vito Filippo Cacciamo has said, is this Bologna team crap, or is it just super people? So is it the team or the player, or is it the coach or the players?
Not an easy one, but look, so far I'm going to say Inzaghi. I hate to say it because I thought he did all right to drop down to Serie C and then work his way back up with Venezia. So I didn't mind seeing him get a second chance in Serie A after flopping at Milan. But so far, I think he's got his tactics wrong, and also just the general approach of the team is not very good. I think it needs to be more balanced, whereas, like we were just saying in the last couple of minutes, no, there's nothing much there. They're not a really strong defensive team, nor do they provide much going forward. So he's got a lot of work to do during the international break.
There we go. Right. What else will we talk about, lads? Let's see what the people in the comments are saying. Hussein says, Pipo was a great player, but he's a terrible coach. Lol's XY has chained back in. He said, Inzaghi shouldn't have taken the Bologna job. This might hurt his career big time. Right, Nick, the career of Pipo Inzaghi, obviously, at Milan, he was on a hiding to nothing there. Did really well with Venezia, almost got them. Or his career as a coach is finished?
I just missed the question there, but I'll go on about Pipo. It's interesting. He was a bit of an opportunist as a striker, obviously, just those kind of finishing, that's what he made famous throughout his career. He doesn't seem to be taking the best opportunities as a coach, I would say. He took on Milan, that Milan job in not great circumstances. It was never really going to end well. And you have to question whether Bologna, like, I mean, it is a return to Serie A and it needs to be somewhere. But for me, Bologna, just there was nothing really too positive looking forward about this team. You know, looking into this season when we're predicting the relegations, they were very close by in terms of who might be. Oh, look, Connor's there.
Just keep talking, Nicholas.
Sorry, I get distracted by that face. He was in Bologna was in that thought process for me, and very close, you know, possibly 17th. So maybe it wasn't the right position for him, but Pilippo had the skills as a player more so than his brother, but apparently Simone got all the tactics and the brains. Let's say, so, you know, he can't have it all.
Oh, well, that's true. You can't have it all. Well, it was going to be a surprise, everybody. But Connor Clancy has arrived to talk to us about some Italian football. Connor Clancy, say hello to the people.
Hello, people. Hello, Dov. Hello, Nick. Hi, Vito.
Hi, Connor.
There we go. Connor Clancy's here. Right, Connor Clancy. Put in your two cents about Parma and Juventus, because you were there for Forza Italian football live in the Stadio Ennio Tardini for Forza Italian football. I just reiterate that point. What happened? Was it good? Was it fun? Did you have fun?
It was.
Tell the anecdote about everybody laughing. That was fun.
That's where I was going to start as well, to be honest. And I almost feel bad starting with this because it just feels like I'm picking on him at this stage. But Cristiano Ronaldo, though, he had a stinker, an absolute stinker. He was just getting in the way. Juve were really trying to pass the ball to him. As soon as they went 1-0 up, him and Mandzukic swapped, and they were all just trying to kick the ball to Cristiano to score, and he wasn't having any of it. He was awful. But then the giggles had started to kind of surface when he missed the chance from close range. I think it was a header, and he got really annoyed. And then the ball came down. I was going to say it dropped from, but it didn't. He forced this effort. The ball was about shoulder high, edge of the box, and he tried to do a mental scissor kick type thing, completely missed the ball, landed on his arse, the ball landed beneath his foot, and the whole stadium just laughed at him. It was one of the best things I've ever seen in the stadium. Normally, like when you're in a football ground, you're used to hearing certain noises. An eruption of laughter is not one of those noises. And when you know it's because of something Cristiano Ronaldo did wrong, it just makes it so much funnier. It was amazing.
There you go, everybody. It was amazing. We'll see how amazing it is when he scored 35 goals at the end of the season, and then everybody will be laughing on the other side of their faces. But there you go.
He's going to do it. He's a brilliant player, as we said, every week we've done this podcast, which just makes it all the more enjoyable that he's struggling in these early stages. Yeah, we can enjoy it.
He'll get his first goal in the Champions League. That's what happened. And then it'll be CR7 Champions League and all that. Right. The other game Conor Clancy was at was Fiorentina versus Udinese in Florence. Benassi scored. Fiorentina won. What happened? Was it good? Were Fiorentina amazing? Did you say that you were going to watch Giovanni Simeone?
I was there to watch Giovanni Simeone, and I was impressed by him. But I also felt a bit sorry for him because he was trying to do absolutely everything by himself for about 65 minutes. And then Fiorentina kind of came to life after that. But yeah, and this game was considerably less fun than the game last night, to be fair. But it was still, the second half was good. Udinese were clearly just there to get a point, and you can't really argue with that too much. But Fiorentina probably should have carved out more of that considered. They look like they're really missing a proper number 10. I know Marco Piazza came on and he's wearing the number 10 on his back, but they're missing someone in that midfield three of Benassi, Gerson, and I can't remember who the third was in midfield, who can just kind of unpick a hole in the defence and that. Because Giovanni Simeone was getting absolutely nothing. He was coming back deep into his own half countless times and driving the team forward himself. But then Chiesa kind of woke up in the second half, and it was him really who delivered the goal, because Benassi will get the credit, and rightly so, for what was a great finish. But Udinese had a corner, and Chiesa picked up the ball in his own box and absolutely tore forward with it down the left. But then as soon as he got into the Udinese half, he slowed down. The whole stadium was going mental at him, telling him to pass, and he was just almost strolling. He knew that Benassi was coming over, someone was coming up on his right, and everyone else was going mental trying to get him to pass it to. I think it was Piazza who was up with him, and he just waited and waited and waited, and then just delivered the most beautiful dinked pass just over the top of the defence into Benassi's path, and he smashed it. It was a great finish, to be fair, but I was really impressed with Chiesa and, to a lesser extent, Simeone, because he was getting evidently frustrated. He was trying to get the crowd up for it at points, and they were. But the best part about this game was when the goal went in. Obviously, you know where the press box is? It's kind of down the touchline towards the corner where the Fiorentina fans are, on the same side as the dugouts. And I was watching the players running over celebrating, trying to make sure I got the goal scorer right. And then next thing, Stefano Pioli just charges down the touchline and joins in celebration. I was loving it. In the stand, it was great.
Well, good things come to those who wait, like Conor Clancy joining the podcast at 12:30. Jordan Vertu says, Lolex, why? He was the player that Fiorentina were missing. So there you go. That's the man you forgot, Conor.
He wasn't playing, but they could have done someone like him in there.
That's what he said. He's the player they were missing. So there you go. So he said it right. So relax. Right. What else happened in Serie A? Lazio won. They beat Frosinone 1-0. Chievo and Empoli drew 0-0. Atalanta got beat off Cagliari. Nicholas, that was Atalanta got beat off Cagliari.
I said this to you.
No, you're not Nicholas, you're Conor Clancy.
But I've just put it on record. I said that Cagliari. The only surprise is Pavoletti didn't score.
Give him time. Torino beat Spal 1-0. That game was delayed or suspended halfway through the first half because of heavy rain, but eventually got finished and Kulu got the goal there. And then the game Vieri Capretta was at in Reggio Emilia, Sassuolo smashed 5 past Genoa, 5-3 it ended up. And he was raving about Babacar and Kevin Prince Boateng in that game. So there you go. Kevin Prince Boateng is back, everybody, and back with a bang. Before we finish, I want to touch on one thing. We've seen the international breaks coming up, right? And we've seen all the teams play, we've seen kind of what's happening and things like that. Vito, in the kind of first three rounds in general, is there anything that's kind of surprised you that you've kind of noticed, or is there anything that's kind of caught your eye?
About Serie A so far in the opening three rounds, I would probably say Milan style of play. Again, it seems like they've taken Maurizio Sarri's possession-based philosophy and adapted it as their own. And for what I was saying earlier, I really didn't think that Gattuso was capable of doing that. He seemed to be that hard-working type. So, yeah, so far he's proved me wrong. And it'd be interesting to see how Milan progresses as a team Now they got on off-field stability, and having Higuain there up front, they've got a proper strike instead of Nicola Kalinic. So far, so good for them.
What about you, Nicholas? Apart from Inter, you're not allowed to talk about Inter. Is there anything that surprised you? Maybe Napoli conceding lots of goals and their young players not being very good. No?
To be honest, nothing.
Nothing.
There's nothing that comes out to me that's like, the overly surprising so far. Like, it's, you know, it's so early still, but no, everything's, I mean, I don't want to say it's as I expected, but it's going along fairly well. Maybe I thought Chievo would be a bit better than they are, because they are.
It took you a wee while to get that in.
Oh, wait, you did get a clean sheet, so I'll give you that. Congratulations.
There you go. Listen, we've had a hard start to the season, so relax. Just give it time, it'll come. What about you, Conor Clancy? You've been to some Italian football games this season. Is there anything kind of that springs to your mind?
Yeah, and I am going to go back on one of my preseason predictions already, and that is Parma are going to stay up. They've got enough about them. Yeah, they brought in a lot of players late on in the window, and I honestly think they've got enough about them to stay up now. I think I don't know who else is going to get in their place, but there's probably enough down there that Bologna. They can be. Yeah, but Bologna will slot in there quite nicely. But yeah, Parma will stay up.
There you go. Right, and we had a comment. LolXY has said De Zerbi, it's a swallow. Surprised him. A good manager, but he didn't expect them to start delivering right away. And I think you're right. I mean, I think I've only watched a couple of Sassuolo's games so far. Obviously, didn't see the game tonight, but they've been really, really good. I really like the way they're playing. And Kevin Prince-Boateng, just like we mentioned before, is fantastic. Filippo Cacciamo's chimed in. Cristiano Ronaldo Jr. scored for Juve before his dad. He's surprised about that. He did. I think he got 4 in his debut for the under-9s at Juve as well. And there was a comment I wanted to bring up. Stefan Butcher. They said, don't forget to talk about Inter's amazing passing. And he mentioned 707 passes. I've got this stat here, right? Inter attempted against Bologna 808 passes, completed 729, which is both our record, which is both our records for Inter in a Serie A match since Opta started collecting data in the 2004-05 season. So there you go, Nicholas.
Does that just reinforce what you said about Bologna being so bad? Because I know when you got back from the game the other night, we were chatting about it.
Horrible.
Because Inter aren't this, I know they're changing a bit this year, but they're not this heavy possession-based team.
Mm.
So that's...
Bologna had no midfield, so it was just basically free reign.
Bologna have no team this season. They're going to be awful.
Well, but Badger Demon said there's probably 650 of those passes were doing nothing. So it's two things, probably right, because a lot of them were sideways. But I think it's quite noticeable, because I remember last season doing some of the statistics on FIF, and like there were points where Napoli were getting like between 700 and 1,000 passes, like attempting that every game, because that's how Sarri wanted them to play. And obviously we've only got one game to go on, so it'll be interesting to see if that's something Spalletti keeps going with in terms of trying to get Inter to play a stupid amount of passes, or if he starts just going, like, get it to the wingers, take somebody on, and then get the ball to Icardi. There you go. Everybody's quiet. They're all nodding their heads there, silently in the background. Right, unless anybody's got anything to add, I think we're done here.
Yeah, that's all good.
Yeah, all right, there you go. Thank you, Vitro. Everybody's in silence. Right, what do we do at the end here, Connor? I don't know what to do at the end. This is your thing. Go for it.
All right,
over to you.
Mute your mic there, please. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I missed you guys this week. CM Fox hasn't been in the comments. It's sad. But basically, head over to ForzaItalianFootball.com, read everything we've done. I don't know if Dov mentioned it at the top, but of the 10 Serie A games to be played this season or this weekend, we were in the press boxes for 7 of them, which you don't get that from any other English-speaking Italian football website. So that is why you need to tell everyone that we are the website that you should be reading, listening to the podcast or watching the videos of. And just, if you need anything about Italian football, we've got you covered. Don't go anywhere else. It's fine. You can get us on Instagram. We're smashing the Instagram stories of the games. We're at Forza Italian Football. On Facebook at Forza Italian Football as well. On Twitter at Serie A FFC, just to make things different. You know where the boys are. Get them on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the lot. I should be back I don't know if it's next week or whenever.
No, it'll be 2 weeks because the international breaks next week. We've got Italy against Poland and Italy against Portugal. So, yeah, you'll not be back for a couple of weeks yet.
Nice.
We'll have to miss you for a wee while.
Sorry, guys. I'm sure they don't miss me. I miss them. I'm sure they're delighted when you fill in.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they were excited to not hear your voice or see your face. I know Nick was. Nick was really happy with that. He was like, yes, Dov's coming on. First corner, keep him away. Right. Okay, everybody. Thank you very much. And that is it. There's nothing left for me to say apart from arrivederci.
Bye.
Ciao. Ciao.
Garrisca vento in lava la viola sui campi della sfida del valore. Una speranza viva ci consola. Abbiamo 11 atleti e un solo cuore.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.